All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. We have a beautiful daf ahead of us today. So today's daf is daf Dalet 4. We're going to pick up on Gimel Amud Beis 3b at the first wide line. What are they allowed to do today? Our share this morning is dedicated by Stephanie Rabinowitz in commemoration of the yahrzeit of her mother. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Shama will have an aliyah on the family and the Chama. So let's begin. So remember again, yesterday the Gemara introduced us to the fascinating sugya that you cannot knock down a shul until you build a new one. So this leads the Gemara to a fascinating discussion. Ubaba ben Buta, hechi as bele eitza lehordus lemistere beis hamikdash. If that's the case, how was Baba ben Buta able to give hordus? Hordus, of course, is Herod. How was Baba ben Buta able to give hordus the eitza, the advice, to knock down the Beis HaMikdash and to rebuild it? Remember again, the remaining structures that we have on the second Beis HaMikdash today, the Kotel, as well as the, you know, there's another, the wall extends out, if you ever go to the Kotel HaKatan, as they call it, or the wall extends down, all of that ultimately is the remnants of the structure that Herod built. So, interesting enough, we're going to see that Herod essentially tore down the second Beis HaMikdash and rebuilt it. So how, we'll see, that was on the advice of Baba ben Buta. So how was Baba ben Buta able to go ahead and give Herod that advice to tear down the Beis HaMikdash when yet there wasn't another structure built? So the we learned before that you can't tear down one shul until you've built the new one. See by Sema. So one possibility is that Baba ben Buta saw cracks in the structures. Remember, we saw yesterday that one of the exceptions to this rule is if there are cracks in the structure. If the structure itself is structurally unsound, so you can knock it down in order to build something new, even though the new one is not yet built. This is interesting. Or the other possibility is what? The monarchy is different. Because kings do not go back on their word. Now, what does that mean? Remember, one of the possibilities that we were concerned about was the issue that what's going to happen? They're not going to end up building the new building. So apparently, that the Gemara suggests that concern doesn't apply with a king. Because when a king says he's going to do something, he's going to do something. The Amar Shmuel, I Amar Malchusa Karnoturi, if the king says, I'm going to uproot mountains, Akar Turi Velo Hadarbe, he's going to uproot mountains and he's going to retract. So we'll say, Snadigma is going to tell the story. This is an incredible Maisa. Hordus, Abdu Debes Chashmonoi Haba. Herod was a Hasmonean slave. Remember again, after the Nes of Chanukah, the Beis HaMikdash is rededicated. The Chashmonoim really occupy two seats of power. They are the Kohanim Gedolim, and they are also the kings. Machlokes Rambam and the Ramban as to whether or not the Chashmonoim did the right thing by occupying Malchus. The Rambam says they did a very good thing. Ramban says it was their undoing. Okay, now without getting into that right now. In any event, Herod was a slave to the Chashmonoim. Nosan Einu Ba'osa Tinokes, he set his eyes upon, he fell in love with one of the Chashmonoi daughters. Yomachad, Shamu Gabra Baskala Domar Ka Avda Demarat Hashta Matzlach. One day, Herod hears a Baskal, and what does the Baskal say? Any slave who rebels against his master today will be successful. So what happens? Kam katlinu luchulhu maruse v'shairi lahi yinuksa. He went off, Herod launched a rebellion, killed off all of his masters, and spared this one girl. Ki chaza hi yinuksa de kabay leminsaba. When this girl saw that Herod's intention was to marry her, she went up to the roof of her home. She raised her voice and she said, from this point on, whoever says that he is a descendant of the Chashmonai family, avdahu, know that he is a slave. Because I am the last remaining member of the Chashmonai family. And she threw herself off the roof. So she took her own life rather than marry Herod. So as I see, the idea over here is she knew that Herod was going to try to claim that he was a member of the Chashmonai family. Why? Because he wanted to be able to claim royalty. Because again, Every single monarch that we learn about, who is not of royal blood, spends a good part of his monarchy trying to establish royal blood lineage. We see it with Ahasuerus, and we see it with Herod. So she makes a proclamation, he is not part of the family, I am the last remaining member of the Hashemite family, and she throws herself off the roof. So the Gemara says, Tamna Sheva Shnin Bedufsha. He preserved her body 7 years in honey. Ikuda Amri Ba'ala. Some say that he had relations with her corpse. Ikuda Amri Lo Ba'ala. Others say he did not have relations with her. Da Amri Le Ba'ala. Hatamna Li Yisuva Li Yitzrei. So those who say that he had relations with her was to satisfy his desires. Uda Amri Le Lo Ba'ala. So if he wasn't having, why did he preserve her body? Ditamna Kihechi Dinam Rubas Melech Nasav. In order that he could claim that he married royalty. Well, so we're going to see Herod is an exceptionally sick man. This is, and this is going to sound strange, like this is the least of it. This is the least of it. But again, you're on this, but this is very important because it gives you a window into his personality. Leaving aside the immoral possibility that he had relations with her corpse, but the idea that he preserved her body in order that he could claim that he married royalty is incredibly perverse in and of itself. So the Gemara says the following: Amar Mandarsh Mekarvachacham. Now both say, now here's an interesting halacha. The halacha is that in order to be Melech Yisrael, you have to be what's called Mekarvachacha Tasim Alecha Melech. It has to be from the midst of your brother. When she says the following: A king cannot be a convert, and a king cannot be an Eved. A king must be a naturally born Jew, which makes sense because monarchy has to come from Shevet Yehuda, from the tribe of Yehuda. So Herod is exceptionally insecure in his monarchy. See, he knows this drasha. Remember, again, he was a slave in the Hashmonai home. He heard a lot of Torah, learned a lot of Torah. See, he says, "Who darshin this mikarev achacha tasim alacha melech?" Who's the one who said that you can't appoint a king ultimately from within your brethren? Rabbanan, it's the rabbis. So what did he do? Kam katlinu l'kul rabbanan. He killed off all of the rabbis. He felt that the rabbis, which of course in this context refers to the Sanhedrin, he killed off the entire Sanhedrin because he felt that the Sanhedrin would be a threat to his rule. They would challenge his legitimacy as a monarch. But what did he do? Shafke the Bava ben Buta, the Mishkal Itzamine. He spared one rabbi, because everyone needs to have a rav, even Herod, right? So what happens? He spares Bava ben Buta, and interestingly, he spares Bava ben Buta in order that he could ask Itza, that he could ask advice from Bava ben Buta. Top of Dalit, Ahadir le Kalile Daile, Nakrina le'ene. But what did he do? Literally, he made Bava ben Buta a crown of porcupine skin and blinded Bava ben Buta. So although he keeps Bava ben Buta alive, he blinds Bava ben Buta in an effort to make sure that Bava ben Buta cannot go ahead and launch a rebellion. Despite this, Herod is exceptionally paranoid that Bava ben Buta is going to create a rebellion. Yom Achad Asa v'Yosef Kameh. So Herod tries to test Bava ben Buta's allegiance. Bava ben Buta is now blind. So Herod comes before him, pretending to be like a regular guy. Amar Chazi Mar Hay Avda Bisha Mai Kavit. So Herod pretends to be a regular guy speaking to Bava ben Buta, and is trying to feel out Bava ben Buta's real opinion about Herod. So what happens? So Herod pretends to be the commoner, says Bava Muta, this king. Do you see about this king? He's terrible. My covet, what could we do about him? Amrle Maya Avidle, to which Bava ben Buta says, well, what can I do? Amrle Nilat Yemar, to which Herod, right, to which Herod says to Bava ben Buta, you should curse the king. Amrle Ksiv Gam Bemadaacha Melech Al Tikalo. The Pasuk Rabosei says in Koheles, even in your thoughts, you should not curse the king. Bosei, this, by the way, is an incredible, incredible yisod, which is so contemporarily relevant. Shlomo HaMelech was saying, there has to be a respect for leadership. There has to be a respect for leadership. Whether you like the leader, you don't like the leader, you agree with the leader, you don't agree with the leader, when someone occupies a position of authority and leadership, by definition, that requires respect. We'll say, you should know, again, this is not a political conversation, but again, it's what's happening now represents a terrible stain on this country. The fact that people don't respect a democratic process. You could disagree, you could dislike the president, you could do whatever you want, but the notion that there's blatant disrespect for the highest office in the land, the most powerful position in the free world, is a chisaron in our societal values. But in any event, Shlomo Melech understood this as well. Even in your thoughts, you should not curse the king. Amrale, I love Melechu. So again, Herod's trying to bait. This is, what do they call this? Entrapment, right? It's like he's baiting him. He's trying to get him to say something bad about the king. So he said, ah, come on, that guy's not a king. Amarle, Vele Havi Asher, you know what, you're right. So Bob Mood says, you're right, even if he wasn't a king, but he was just a rich man. Vele Havi Asher Ba'alma, Uksiv, Ubechedre Mishkavcha Altekal Al Asher. The Pasuk also says that in your bedroom, you shouldn't go ahead and curse the rich man. Even the rich man is someone who has been given blessing by God. So by definition, his blessing, that in of itself deserves your respect. And he could still just be just a regular Nasi, right? The Nasi is just the leader. And if Pasuk says, there's a concept of respecting leadership. There's a concept, ultimately, again, of respecting someone who's in a position of power. So again, Herod's still trying to bait him. Yeah, but that's only true if he conducts himself like the members of your nation. But this guy Herod, he's not even conducting himself in accordance with the laws of the Jews. To which Bava ben Buddha says, you know what, even if you're right, I'm scared of him. Right, I see what Herod has already done to me, and I'm scared about what he can do to me. Amarle, leka inish da azel, delay malay, da ana the at yasivna. To which Herod says, "I have nothing to be afraid of. It's only me and you sitting here. No one else will ever know if you curse the king." Buddha gives a profound answer. I'm like, "Siv, ki of hashamayim yoliches hakol, ubal knafayim yogid davar. The bird of the heavens will carry the sounds, will carry the voices. Ubal knafayim, and the winged creatures have much to say." What is Bava ben Buddha saying? Both say the only way to ensure that something remains confidential is how? Don't say it. But the moment that you say it, this is an incredible yisod in life, because inevitably, at different points in time, over time, we've all gotten ourselves in trouble by sharing important information with someone who we thought would keep it quiet, and they didn't. So Shlomo Melech is saying, have no expectations of confidentiality. If you don't want anyone to know about something, better not to say it at all. Because if you say it, the people will find out about it. So what happens? Amalei, Amahu. So we'll say, finally, so Herod realizes that he's not going to get Bava ben Buta to curse him. So he says, Bava ben Buta, we'll say, Dal Ramadal, the first wide line. It's me. It's Herod. So we'll say, Herod makes such a ridiculous statement. Had I known the rabbis were such good guys, I would have never killed all of you. In other words, that what Herod is saying is, I was so scared about the rabbis fermenting a rebellion that I proactively killed out the Sanhedrin to prevent a rebellion. Had I known about the allegiance that the Rabbanan had to leadership, I would not have killed out all of you. Herod says, what could I do to make amends? He says, what could I do? I killed out the Sanhedrin, except for you. What could I do to make amends? Amrlei, Hukava Ora Shalom, Dixiv, Kinei Mitzvah Torah, or Herod, you extinguished the light of the world, referring to the Rabbanon who teach Torah as the light of the world. Yelech v'yasak ba'or sha'olam. You should go and you should busy yourself with the light of the world. The chesiv v'noru elav kol agoyim. We'll say a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. You extinguish the light of the world, the Torah, the Rabbanon. You should go ahead and build the light of the world, the Beis HaMikdash. Igad Amri, hachi omerle, husima eno shel olam. Herod, you blinded the eye of the world. The chesiv v'haya imenei ha'eda. Yelech v'yasak ba'eno sha'olam. You blinded the eyes of the world. The eyes are reference to the Rabbanon. You should go ahead and busy yourself with rebuilding the eye of the world. The chesiv. So Bava ben Buta essentially says to Herod, if you want to make amends for what you've done, you should rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Also, when we say rebuild, remember again, the Beis HaMikdash was standing. What Bava ben Buta was saying to Herod is, make something even bigger, make something even more beautiful. Amarle, Mistafina Mimachusa. It's so interesting, right? So Herod says, well, I'm afraid of the government. Remember, at this point in time, there really, Judea, Eretz Yisrael, is a Roman province. It's a Roman province. So Herod said, listen, you know, I'm a big shot here, but I'm not in charge in Rome. I'm not in charge in Rome, so I'm scared that if I rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, that the Romans will get upset at me. So well, listen to this. This is amazing. Amarle, it's so interesting how all wisdom in life comes from the Gemara. Amarle, here's what you should do. Shadr Shlicha, you know what? You should ask permission. But here's how you should ask permission. Send an agent to Rome to ask permission. Velezel Shasa. But make sure the Shaliach takes the long way to Rome, and it takes him a year to get to Rome. Vele'akiv Shasa. Then, you know, once he gets to Rome, let him spend a year in Rome, right? A year in Rome, let him ask permission then. And what? And make sure he takes the long way back, and it takes him a year to get back. In other words, buy yourself 3 years. But in the meantime to Rome, what should you do? Demolish the current structure and rebuild a new one. In other words, what is Bava ben Buta? What advice is he giving Herod? Sometimes in life, it's better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission. So what he's saying is, you know what? Go, no, certainly you should ask permission, but in the interim, before you get the answer, do what you have to do. Amazing, do what you have to do. So what happens? So Bava ben Buta goes ahead and Herod does this, Shalchule, Imlos. So what happens? So 3 years later, it's amazing. 3 years later, the Shaliach comes back. Now what's happened in the midst of 3 years? We're going to see Herod has built a magnificent Beis HaMikdash. A magnificent Beis HaMikdash. So now what happens? 3 years later, the courier comes back from Rome, and what's the message? Okay, fine. Shalchule. So they sent the final message back to him. Emlo satarta altister. So here's the message to Herod. If you have not demolished the building, do not demolish it. Vim satarta altivni. If you demolished it, do not rebuild it. Vim satarta ubanisa. And if you demolished it and you rebuilt it, we've got your number. We know exactly what you did, and that you're asking for permission after you already did what you wanted to do. Avdei bisha basar da avinu islachin. Only bad slaves ask permission after they do something. In other words, they're outing Herod. They're saying, you schnook. I mean, that's not an exact quote, but you understand. Meaning, you know, we know exactly who you are. You, what a mechutzah. You might be, you know, you might be the big man in Yerushalayim, but we know exactly who you are. Im zaynocha alecha, if you think you have your weapons about you, meaning you think you're such a bal kavod, sefrecha kan, we have your lineage in front of us. Lo raka v'lo bar raka, you are not a prince, you are not the son of a prince. Hordus avda kalanya misabid. Hordus, Herod, is a slave who became emancipated. So they give him Musa in Rome, pretty much meaning they know that he already built it. They know that he already built it. And they say, you're a bad slave. We understand what you're doing. And just know, we've got your number. My raka. What does the word raka mean? Machusa means a king, or royalty, I should say. Dichsev anokhe yom rachum ashuach melach libayseh mehacha vayikru lefanecha avrech. Amro. So also they said, listen to how amazing this is. Misha lo ra'a binyan hurdus, lo ra'a binyan na'a miyamav. So also they say, that whoever did not see, Rechitzlas Gemara and Sukkah, whoever did not see the structure of Herod never saw a beautiful structure in his life. In other words, the structure of Herod was absolutely magnificent. I will say, more magnificent than the structure of Shlomo, and more magnificent than the structure of Ezra. Herod built the most magnificent structure. Again, when we look, just you should know, at models of the second Beis HaMikdash, more often than not, you are looking at Herod's model. You're looking at Herod's Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara said, "But my banye." So what is amazing? So what did he build the Beis HaMikdash from? Amarava ba'avne shisha umirma. He built it, I will say, if you look at Rashi, ba'avne shisha, shiyesh yarok, he built it with green marble, umirma is white marble. Now we'll discuss this color scheme. Green marble and white marble. Amarava ba'avne shisha, Ika de Amri, ba'avne kuchla shisha umirma. Others say he built it with blue marble, green marble, and white marble. We'll say, going to see why this is important in just a moment. And Herod had an interesting building structure. Apik shafa va'ayol shafa, kihechi dinakabal sida. So we'll say, listen to this. So when you would normally build, the way you would build this house, you were using stones, you would place one stone on top of the other, you'd put the mortar in between the stones. The way Herod built, and you could still see this in some of the remaining walls. Remember again, the walls that we have, the Kotel, the Kotel HaKotan, the underground walls, these are not the walls of the Beis HaMikdash, of course. These are the retaining walls of Har HaBayis. One of the things that Herod did, I will say, is he tripled the size of the Temple Mount, of the Har HaBayis. Well, how do you triple the size of the Temple Mount when it's a mountain? And what's the answer? You fill it in with earth. But how do you fill it in with earth and ensure that the earth is just not going to slide off? You build retaining walls. So if you can imagine for just a moment, Herod built walls around the Har HaBayis, filled in that area with dirt and built up. That's what Har HaBayis is, I mean, I don't want to call it a landfill because that doesn't sound right, but I think that's the right term, right? Landfill? You fill it in with land? Is that a garbage dump? Okay, fine. But you understand, he filled it, right? He filled it with land, meaning he filled it with land to create it. So what we have of the Kotel, that's not, of course, a Beis HaMikdash wall. That's a, it's called
Reclaimed.
Okay, so therefore, again, that, so we have a remaining retaining wall that Herod built. What the Gemara is now describing is how the walls of the actual Beis HaMikdash. So for example, when you look at the walls of the Kotel, when you look at the stones of the Kotel, so also remember again, those stones are from multiple different eras already by now. You can see that in the different types of the stones. But when you look at the larger stones, they're stacked one on top of the other. In the Beis HaMikdash, it was not like that. In the Beis HaMikdash, what happened was you had one stone that came out, one stone that was recessed, one stone that protruded, one stone that was recessed. The reason Herod did that is because then in the open areas between the stones, he would put the cement there. Now the beauty of that is what? You can't see the cement on the outside of the wall, right? All you see from the wall is the stone exterior. Why did he do that? So Herod was going to, so listen to this, Herod was going to cover the entire Beis HaMikdash in gold. Can you imagine this? The entire Beis HaMikdash in gold. Omri Rabbanan, listen to this. Omri Rabbanan, the Rabbanan said, no, don't do that. Shavke, leave it alone. Da'achi shapir tve, because this is even more beautiful. Dinechse ki udusa diyama. Because I will say, imagine this for just a moment. So you have a wall, exterior walls, that are made of white, blue, green marble. And remember, again, because of the protrusions and the recessed stones, it has a wavy image. What does it look like? It looks like the ocean. It looks like the sea. So that Rabbanan said, it is a beautiful image to come up and to see the Beis HaMikdash, ultimately, again, that resembles the sea. What's the symbolism of the sea? Remember, again, we go back to our Gemara Maseches Menachos, where the Gemara says, why do we wear tcheles? Because tcheles domele yam, yam domele rakia, rakia domele kisya kavod. Ultimately, again, the sea, the blueness of the sea, is one of the first images that connects us to the blueness of the celestial sphere, of the kisya kavod. So that Rabbanan felt better not to cover it with gold, but leave this beautiful ocean image. It must have been magnificent. So the Gemara says, Ubava ben buta, heichi avod. So let's say Herod rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash as a form of penance, as a form of atonement, for killing out the Sanhedrin. So ask the Gemara, Bava ben Buta heichi avod haki. Now, the Gemara has a very interesting question. How was Bava ben Buta permitted to give Herod the remedy for his sin? In other words, what the Gemara suggests over here is that Herod should have been forced to suffer the results of his sin and should not have been given the derech of tshuva from Bava ben Buta. Why was Daniel punished? Because Daniel gave etzah to Nebuchadnezzar, how Nebuchadnezzar could escape a punishment for his misdeed. So again, the Gemara over here quotes the pasuk from Daniel, Lahen Malko Milki Yishpar Aloch, Vakataach Bitstaka Purach, Vavyasak, Bamichan Anina Tehevi Archal Shevasek. Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, if you want to go ahead and do tshuva, you should give a lot of tzedakah. You should give tzedakah to the poor. Uksiv, and the pasuk says, Kula Mata, Al Nebuchadnezzar, Malko Uksiv, Vluktas Yarkin Tre Asa. So we'll say, Daniel gives Nebuchadnezzar this Eitzah to go ahead and avoid punishment by giving tzedakah to the poor. And sure enough, it worked for Nebuchadnezzar not to absolve them of responsibility, but it delayed punishment for a full 12 months. So the Gemara says, Uksiv, Uksas, fine. Ibai Seima, Shaini Abda, Dechayeb Mitzos. So we'll say, so again, we're going to see, by the way, that Daniel was punished for giving this Eitzah to Nebuchadnezzar. So how was Bava ben Buta able to give Eitzah to Herod? So the Gemara gives two answers. One possibility is, an Eved is different. Herod is an Eved Kenani. An Eved Kenani, we'll say, still Chayeb in Mitzos. And therefore, again, Bava ben Ruta had an obligation to teach him how to do tshuva. V'bay seima, shiny beis hamikdash, di lo malchus lo mitbini. The other possibility I will say is that, again, this was about the beis hamikdash. And without the government, without the monarchy, the beis hamikdash could not be rebuilt. So the Gemara says the following. But Daniel minal dinash, I know that Daniel was punished for giving Eitzah to Nebuchadnezzar. So if you want to say it's because he gave him Megillas Esther, the Pasuk says that Daniel went ahead and that Esther called to Hasach. Right? Remember again, who was Hasach? But Amarav, Hasach zed Daniel. Hasach was Daniel. So the Gemara says, honey, so why do they call him Hasach? Honey chalaman damer shechatchuhu migdulaso. So this makes sense according to the opinion that says that they cut him down from his greatness. That was his punishment. But according to the opinion that says that he was called Hasach, why? Because all the matters of the kingdom were decided by his mouth. So where do you see his punishment? To which the Gemara says, Dishajuha Laguva da Aryusa. Also remember again the famous story, they threw Daniel into the den of lions. And even though, again, miraculously, Daniel was saved, but the anxiety of that situation, which we must imagine would come about as a result of being thrown into a den of lions, so that was his punishment. Hakol kumina gamadina. So we'll say, so now we go back a little bit to regular Gemara. So this is just amazing because now you've gotten a snapshot, the entire history of the second Beis HaMikdash, I should say, the Herodian version of the second Beis HaMikdash, and again, all comes about as a result of the tshuva of Herod. In any event, back to the Gemara. Hakol kuminag ha-medina. So we'll say, remember again, the Mishnah taught us that we're building a wall to divide between the two jointly owned partnership fields. So the halacha is we build the wall, kiminag ha-medina, meaning whatever building materials people use to build the wall, that's what we use. Hakol asui emai. What does this come to include? La asui asra denehigi behutzu adafne. Even in a place of Osei, where the custom is not to use stones at all, but the custom is to use, reeds or branches from a palm tree, if that's the minhag ha-makom, that's what you build it from as well. Lefichach, im nafal akos ha-makom ha-avanim shel shneihem. Therefore, again, if the wall falls down, so ultimately the stones, as well as the land upon which the wall sat, is divided between both of them. Pshitas, the Gemara says, that's obvious. No, it's necessary to teach me a case of where the wall fell into the reshus of one of them. Inami, depaninu chad reshus of the day, or where one of the parties cleared or moved all of the stones into his reshus. So what would I have thought? I would have thought the following. If, let's say, Reuven and Shimon are partners, and the wall falls into Reuven's field, that perhaps Reuven could claim it's in my field, therefore it's mine. And Shimon, if you want to prove that it's yours, the burden of proof rests upon you. Kamash Malon, no. Kamash and Rabot say that we assume that both the wall, as well as the area upon which the wall was situated, is the joint, belongs to both of them, and therefore a split 50-50. The Chaim Begina, we'll say so too in a garden. In a garden, makom shenagu ligdor mechayven also. In a place where there is a minog to go ahead and put up a fence, we do so. Hagufa kashos. The Gemara says there's an inherent contradiction. On one hand, amrit vechin begina. On one hand, you said the same halach applies in a garden. Makom shenagu ligdor mechayven also. If in a garden, if you live in a place where ultimately what? There is a minog to go ahead and put up a wall. So we obligate the parties to do so. Hastama, what we can infer from here is what? That if there is no minog, in mechayven also, that we don't force parties to put up a wall in a gina. On the other hand, in masefa, about bika makom shenagu shel ligdor, in mechayven also. But Rabbi said, what was the last case? Last case was a bika. We refer to as regular fields, wheat fields. So again, in a place where the minhag is not to put up a wall, we don't obligate the parties. Hastama mechayvin also. Be it sounds like stam, where there is no minhag, that we would obligate them. Hashta stam gina amrit lo. So in the case of a stam gina, what the Gemara is suggesting is there'd be a more compelling argument to put up a wall in a gina than in a bika. So if you tell me that a stam gina, there's no obligation for a wall, bika mi ba, it goes without saying a bika as well. I'm Rabbi Hachkamer, this is what it means to say. V'chin b'stam gina, u'bemakom shenagu ligdor b'bika, mechayvin also. Rabbi says it means the following. then the stam gina, right? In a regular gina, we assume ubemakom shnagu ligdur bevika, in a place where the minog is to put up a wall in a bika. I'm a chayvin also. We obligate him to put up a wall. I'm a rav. Our rav says that's the case. Im kain my aval. Why does the Mishnah say the word aval? Ela I'm a rav. This is what it means to say. Hachi katani v'chein stam gina kimakom shnagu ligdur dem. We'll say a stam gina. We assume that when partners divide up a gina, the stam minog amakom is to what? Is to put up a wall. Umechayvin also aval stam bika. Rabbi says stam bika kimakum shlo nagu dami vein mechayvin also. Rabbi says we assume that the minhag amakum by bika is not to put up a wall, and therefore we will not obligate the parties to do so. Ela imratza komnei slaso shlo bonava osechazis. Rabbi says remember again, in any situation where one partner cannot compel the other partner to put up a wall, so if I'm the partner who wants the wall, what could I do? I build the wall on my property. And remember again, what do? I make a marking on the outside of the wall to indicate two things. Number one, that the wall is standing on my property. Number two, and therefore by extension, that the building materials are mine. So should the wall fall down, the material as well as the space that the wall occupies is mine. So my chazis, I will say, ask the Gemara, what is this chazis? What is this sign that I'm making? I'm rafuna ach bele lekarna lebar. We'll say what I do is the following. I go ahead, Rashi says, Mechafi the karna labar, Rashi akosa yakov the tzar chaviro. If you can imagine, we'll say literally, I bend the top of the wall towards my friend. So what that essentially means is not that I actually tilt the wall, but I thicken up the top of the wall. There's a protrusion on the top of the wall that reaches into my friend's chatzar. That's the simon ultimately again. So who's the owner of the wall? The owner of the wall is the owner who lives on the other side of the wall. So the protrusion goes into the field of my friend, just a little protrusion, and that shows that the guy who lives on the other side of this wall is the owner of this wall. So the Gemara says, "Vene abe lemilagav." So I don't understand. Why do I make the protrusion on the other side of the wall? Then make the protrusion on the side of the wall that's going into my chatzar, the owner of the wall, to which the Gemara says, "Avet chavre nami milabar." Because what are we concerned about? Because the other guy living on the other side of the wall could make his own protrusion on his side of the wall and then claim that's what? That the wall is jointly owned. To which the Gemara says, "Va'amr di diva di dehu." So again, even if I make the protrusion on Reuven's side of the wall, Reuven could what? Shave off that protrusion and he could claim the wall belongs to both of us. To which the Gemara says, "Kizuza meida yadia." We'll say people can tell when there was a protrusion and the protrusion was removed. Ika da amri amravuna michpe lekarna milagav. So others say that what happens. Others say, according to this version, Rav Huna says that I, the owner of the wall, make the protrusion on my side of the wall. I, v'nei avim milabar, but why don't I put it on Reuven's side of the wall? Gai is lechavrei, v'armilei di David Yehu. We're concerned that Reuven may what? Shave off the protrusion and claim the wall belongs to both of us. Yach yashta nami laif lechavrei, v'amar di David Yehu. But why don't I be concerned that if I put the protrusion on my side of the wall, what could happen? Reuven could put the protrusion on his side of the wall and claim the wall is jointly owned. To which the Gemara says, lifufa medi adi. People can tell when an addition was put on. V'hami b'chutz katani. But 1 second, it says that the protrusion, the chazis, or the sign, is put on the outside of the wall. And achinami kasha. That is a kasha on this interpretation. Rabbi Yochanan says, Amadeus, nishaye ba'amsa milabar, v'nei avid milagav. I'm sorry, nishaye ba'amsa milabar. Look at Rashi. Nishaye ba'amsa milabar, yeheitach betit ama b'rosh hakosa mibachutz. So Rav Huna comes along. See, Rabbi Yochanan says that the simon we do is we go ahead and we put on some extra plaster on the top of the wall on the outside of the wall. So if I'm the one building the wall, I put some additional plaster on the top side of the wall on Reuven's side of the wall. I milabar bin the other milagav. So we'll say, but why don't we put the plaster on my side of the wall? That'll be the simon that is my wall. So to which the Gemara says, "Avet chavre milabar." I'm concerned that Reuven's going to put his own plaster on the other side of the wall. Va'amr, we'll say, "Amud dalud amud beis." Second line, "Va'amr di David di dehu." He'll claim the walls, both of ours. Ihachi hashta nami de kafal lechavre. Va'amr di David di dehu. I have a why can't Reuven shave off the additional plaster that's on his side of the wall and claim that the wall belongs to both of us? To which the Gemara says, "Kilufei meidi yada." People know when something has been removed from a wall. Who's supposed to say? So bottom line is, it's a machlokis as to how we're making the simon, but the idea is there's a simon that occurs on one side of the wall. Machlokis on which side of the wall? Machlokis on which side of the wall? But some type of simon. Hutza. So what happens if, let's say, so this is all talking about I'm building the wall from stones. Let's say I'm not building the wall from stones. I'm building the wall from palm branches. So what happens in a situation like that? If I'm building it from the palm branches, how do I put a siman there? I'm Rav Nachman, sinufei yirechei milabar. We'll say what I go ahead and I do. Rashi says, sinufei yirechei milabar. Rashi utim yashav letzad sadech habeiro. Kushiyas sunach ha'utim kishiyach la'echar v'itin eskaveri sami machus. So what I do, I attach the palm tips on the outside. By attaching the palm tips on the outside, that's the siman that the wall is mine. I've been the Eved Milagav, so why don't I go ahead and do this on my side of the wall? So Avin Amichabri Milabark, out of a concern that my friend will do the same thing on his side of the wall, Va'amri, Va'amri Didei V'Didehu, and he'll claim that the wall is his. Ihochi Hashtanami Gayiz V'Shadileh. I, but why don't I be concerned that he'll cut off the top of the palms and claim that the wall is his as well? To which the Gemara says, Mishrak Le Tino. We coat the top of the palms with mud. So that apparently makes them immovable. Hashtanami Asichari Ve'Kalif. Like, I have my friend could come and remove the mud. Kilufa made the idea. People could tell if the mud has been removed. Amar Abaye, who'd say, less late takanta ala bishtaras. We'll say, Abaye comes along and says, if you made your wall out of palm branches, there is no way to make a proper simon in that wall. The only way you could prove that that wall is yours is how? With the shtar, with the document. Avalim asu midashnehem. So we'll say, remember again that the Mishnah says that this is in a case where they made the wall, now this is a very specific case, in a situation where they made the wall in a place that would not normally warrant a wall. A situation where the Menag HaMakom was not to put up a wall, but they both agreed to the wall, so what do? They make a siman on both sides of the wall to show that it's a jointly built wall. So it says the Gemara, Amar le Rava mi parzika lo Ravashi. Lo yasu lo ze ve lo ze. I don't understand. If they're making the wall jointly, then what? Then what? So why do both of them have to make a siman? I have a simpler answer, which is what? Neither of them should make a siman. What's the big deal? They're agreeing to, in the absence of a siman, we assume it's a jointly built wall. Amar le lo tzicha dekadim chadminayev v'avid didei. No, I will say, because what's the case? The case over here is where they made a jointly built wall, but what? One of the parties made a sin on the wall. Vilo avit chavre amar didehu. And again, in this case, if the other party doesn't make a sin, then what's going to happen? The first party is going to inappropriately claim that the wall is his. To which the Gemara says, "V'tana takant l'ramai." So is the Mishnah now talking about etzos for people who are unscrupulous, for people ultimately, again, who are cheats? To which the Gemara says, "V'tana takant l'ramai." Kamashalon amalei v'reisha lav takant l'ramaihu. But again, is the reisha the previous case also? One of them is building a wall, and he has to make a siman. Is that also not to prevent people from cheating? So in the first case, I will say, one of them is building a wall, so first, at least the Mishnah is teaching me a halacha, and then once it's teaching me a halacha, but if one person builds a wall, it's teaching me how to avoid someone else from claiming something that is not his. But I will say the Seifa of the Mishnah, where they're both building the wall, is the Mishnah teaching me a unique halacha and then teaching me how to avoid cheating. It's just going straight how to avoid cheating. Therefore, I will say no. The second part of the Mishnah, the Seifa, is teaching me about a case of a wall that's built with palm branches. No, the last part of the Mishnah is coming to exclude the position of Abaye. Abaye said that if you build a wall from palm branches, there is no way to make a siman except with the shtar. Kamashon, the Mishnah teaches us that no, even with a palm wall, as long as you make a chazis, as long as you make some type of recognizable sign on it, that is enough. So we'll say, so bottom line, halacha lemaisa, again, what we come out with, is that if you're dealing with a chazah that has a din chaluka, then ultimately, again, when partners decide to divide property, they have to put up a wall. We hold hezek riyashmei hezek. If for some reason the dividing property in the minhag hamakom was not to put up a wall, neither party could compel the other to go ahead and put up a wall. If one of the parties decides to do so, he could put up a wall on his own property. Therefore, the wall, the building materials, the property upon which it's situated belongs to the partner who put up the wall, and he makes some type of siman on the wall to show that what? That the wall itself is his. Says the Mishnah. Hamakiv was, and now we come to a very interesting halacha. Hamakiv es chavero, nishal shruchosas. Well, just the way to visualize this case is the following. You have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven owns one field. Reuven owns one field. And Shimon ultimately, again, owns three fields around Reuven. So Shimon's fields surround Reuven on three sides. So what happens? So Amakif es chavera mishal shruchosav, the gather es harishon vesashnia vesashlishis in mechem. So let's listen to this. So let's say Shimon is the, we'll call him the exterior neighbor, right? Shimon's three fields, what does he do? He puts up three fences, meaning on three of the borders that he borders with Reuven, right? So Reuven has one direction that's exposed, right? That's the one direction that he does not border with Shimon. So what happens? So Eimechayvin also. So we don't, even though Reuven benefits, right? Even though Reuven benefits from these three sides, from these enclosures, we do not force him to pay for the enclosures. Why? Why? Because he didn't do it, right? This was Shimon's decision to go ahead and do this. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Im Amad Vigadar Saravias, Megalgim Lavasakal. Alright, let's have a listen to this. Let's say Reuven now decides, remember, Reuven is the interior neighbor. So Reuven now decides to what? To put up a fence on his fourth side. So says Rabbi Yossi, once Reuven decides to go ahead and put up a fence on his fourth side, then what? Megalgim Lavasakal means we make him pay for everything. Now we're going to discuss exactly what this means, but look at the first white line in Rashi. The Galgan Alav Esakol Vaseis Chelko B'Shloshes Harishonos Dekevan Degadre Esatzad Apasuach Goli Daikir Dinechli B'Mai Degadre Chavrei. So we'll say what Rabbi Yossi seems to be saying is the following: when the first three sides were up and Reuven, the interior neighbor, didn't do anything, we don't force him to pay anything. When he puts up the fourth side, the fourth fence in the fourth direction, that shows us, says Rabbi Yossi, that he enjoys being enclosed. Now that he enjoys being enclosed, we make him pay what? His share of the previous three fences as well. So says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav Shmuel, Halach Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yehuda says, Mishol, Halach Haz Rabbi Yossi, Damar, Im Amad V'Gadar Saravias, Magal Gran Alav Esakol. So we'll say, so what happens? So we say, that's right, Rabbi Yossi says that once again, Reuven, the interior neighbor, decides to put up that fourth side, we make him pay his share of the previous three sides as well. Now watch this. Lo shna amad nikaf, lo shna amad makif. This is a very dramatic statement. It doesn't matter if it was Reuven who puts up the fourth side, or if it was Shimon who puts up the fourth side. Once that fourth side goes up, Reuven, the interior neighbor, is obligated to pay his share in all of the walls. Now we're going to discuss this. Sitra, so we'll say, now watch this. Let's analyze this. Itmar, Rav Huna Amar, Hakol Lefi Mashigadar. So we'll say, so let's take a step back. So here's what we know. Leaving aside that last statement, here's what we know. Rabbi Yossi tells us that once Reuven puts up that fourth wall, that indicates that what? He enjoys having an enclosed field, and therefore he needs to pay his share of the previous three walls as well. The shaila now is, what does he have to pay? So he says the Gemara, Rav Huna Amar, Hakol Lefi Mashagadar. Rav Huna says he has to pay in accordance with the walls that were put up. Look at Rashi, Lefi Mashagadar. Rashi says, Bechol Yitzio Shotzi Bayravisho Yachzi Lo Mechza. Whatever type of wall Shimon previously put up on the first three, Reuven has to what? Pay 50% of those walls. So Shimon put up stone walls. Reuven needs to foot 50% of that bill. Chia Barav Amar Hakolufi made Dmei Kanim Bezol. Chia says no. He only has to pay. Rabbi say what? The 50% of the value of a reed wall. In other words, the most inexpensive type of wall you could put up as a partition between fields is a reed wall. So says Chia Barav, when we say that Reuven, the interior neighbor, is obligated to pay 50% of the three walls once he puts up the fourth, that's not in accordance with the actual value, rather it's in accordance with what? Minimum value. So you have to pay 50% of three reed walls. So Tanan Rabbah says, now we analyze this. Tanan, Hamakif es chavera mishal shuchos. So we'll say, now let's go back. Then we're going to analyze the Mishnah. So remember again, in our case, Shimon has three fields that border Reuven's field on three directions. And he puts up walls in three of those directions. V'gadar es harishona ves hashnia ves hashlishis ein mechayvin oso. Right? So remember again, when Shimon puts up his first three walls, we do not obligate Reuven to pay anything. However, ha revius mechayvin oso. But Rabbi says, so what happens? Even the Tanakhama would agree that what? That if Reuven then puts up the fourth wall, that we force Reuven to go out and pay some amount towards the previous three walls. Ema sefer. So Rabbi says, that's the first part of the Mishnah. What's the second part of the Mishnah. Ema Seifa, Rabbi Yossi Omer im Amad v'gadar saravias megalgin alav es hakol. Rabbi Yossi says that once Reuven puts up the fourth wall, we make Reuven pay towards the previous three walls as well. Now just understand, essentially what you have over here is the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi saying the same thing. Right? Remember, what did the Tanakhama say? The Tanakhama said that when Shimon puts up the first three walls, what's Reuven's obligation?
Nothing.
Nothing. But we could infer from that, that's where the Tanakhama statement ends. But what could you infer from the Tanakhama? That if Reuven were to enclose his fourth direction, his fourth open direction, that we would make him share in the previous three directions. Comes along Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi says it explicitly, bless you, that if Reuven comes along and encloses the fourth open direction, he is obligated to share in the cost of the previous three. So obviously, the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi can't be saying the same thing. They must be arguing about something. So what is the Mekula Samachlokis? So watch this. So according to Rav Huna, who says that when we say that Reuven has to pay for his part in the three walls, he has to pay actual cost. So we look at what Shimon paid in order to enclose the first three signs, and we're going to make Reuven pay 50% of the actual costs. So according to Rav Huna, Hainu Deikabe Tanakam Rabbi Yossi. That is the Machlokas in Tanakam Rabbi Yossi. Also, Tanakama Savar, Hakolafi Dmekana Bazal. Tanakama will say, yes, when Reuven puts up that fourth fence, we will make Reuven pay for the previous three as well, but not actual costs. I will say, rather only what? 50% of a reed fence. 50% of a minimum type of partition. And what happens? Tanakama Savar, Hakolafi Dmekana Bazal, in Umasha Gadolom. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Hakolafi Masha Gadar. Whereas Rabbi Yossi will say, no, when Reuven puts up that fourth direction, that fourth wall, I will say, we will make Reuven pay what? 50% of the actual cost. However, El-Lechia Barab, Damra Kolofim Ma'akolofim Afkol, Lefi, Dmei Konin Bazal, Ma'ika, Bein Tanakama, L'Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, according to Chia Barab, who says that everyone will agree that when Reuven puts up that fourth direction, the most he has to pay is what? Is 50% of the value of a reed wall for the first three directions. Then what is the point of contention between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yossi? To which the Gemara says, "Idimekan bezol lo kayoev, my kayoev." If he's not paying him ultimately, again, at least the value of a reed field, then at the end of the day, what is he paying him? So we'll say the Gemara is going to suggest now four different answers. We'll just begin some of them. Ibai Sema, we'll say the first possibility is Agar Nitira Ika Benayu. We'll say the first possibility is what we call the price of a watchman. Now here's what's interesting. If you don't have a wall around your field, you are paying some amount of money for field security. Tanakama Sabar, Agar Nitira in to make Kanabazolo. We'll say in this version, what we will be saying is the following. When Reuven goes ahead and puts up his fourth wall, and he indicates that he wants the fields enclosed, what is he obligated to go ahead and pay to Shimon? He's obligated to pay him the amount of money that he would have paid to a watchman. Now it turns out that again, he benefited from having the field. Now, Bosa, just so you should know, the amount for a watchman is less than the value of the walls, right? Even to make Kanan Bezal. So he'd be obligated to pay the amount of security, the security costs that he saved. So to make Kanan Bezal, though, Rabbi Yossi suffered to make Kanan Bezal. The second possibility, Bosa, is Rishona Shnia Ushlishis Ika Benayim. Bosa, the other possibility is, with this we'll stop. The other possibility is the value of the first, second, and third walls. Tanakama Sabar Revius Hu Diyoivle. So I'll say Tanakama will say it is the value of the fourth wall that Reuven has to pay Shimon. Avalishona Shnia Ushlishis Lo Yoiv. But Reuven is never obligated to pay for the value of the first, second, and third walls because those walls he never wanted. Rabbi Yossi says, Rishona Ushnia Ushlishis Nami Yoiv. Ultimately, Rabbi Yossi will say, no, he has to pay the value of the first, second, and third walls as well. All right, fine, one more. Ibai Seima, Bosse, the other possibility is the following. Makif v'nikaf ikirin Bosse. Now, this goes back to what we said originally in the Itmar, that perhaps the point of contention is the makif v'nikaf. What does that mean? The Tanakhama Sover, Taima da'amit nikaf, the Megalgin alav asakol. It will say, ultimately, again, the reason, Tanakhama will hold, that the reason why Reuven has to pay his portion of the first three walls is why? Because he put up the fourth wall. When he, Reuven, puts up the fourth wall, that indicates that what? That he wants to be enclosed, therefore he must pay his share of the previous three walls as well. Aval Omid Makif. But we'll say, what happens if Shimon puts up the fourth wall? What happens if Shimon puts up the fourth wall? Rabbi said, you see to yourself, why would Shimon put up a fourth wall? Remember again, because Shimon wants all of the access to his fields blocked off. So therefore, he doesn't want people cutting across Reuven's field to get to his field as well. So he puts up the fourth wall. In that case, Reuven would only be obligated to pay Shimon for the fourth wall as well. For the fourth wall. Rabbi Yossi says, Loshna Nikif, Veloshna Makif. Im Amad, the Gadr Megalgan Lav Hasakar. What's that? Rabbi Yossi will hold, no. Once that fourth wall goes up, and now Reuven has a field that is totally enclosed, we'll say, what's going to be the halacha? The halacha ultimately is going to be that Reuven has to pay his portion in all four walls. All right, we'll say one more. Lishnachrina. You know, actually, we'll stop over here by Lishnachrina. We'll let Hashem pick up with this sugya tomorrow. We're almost finished with what we'll say. But bottom line is, here's what we know. Let me just end off with the following, so we're clear. The problem that we're running into is that it appears that the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yossi are both saying the same thing. They both seem to be saying that at the end of the day, when Reuven puts up that fourth wall, he's got to pay for his share in the previous three walls as well. The Gemara now is striving to try to figure out, there obviously must be machlokes, because we would not have redundancy in the Mishnah. We're trying to figure out what is the point of contention between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanna Kamma. We've had four different opinions right now, and Meretz Hashem will continue with one more tomorrow. Shkoyach. Say that again.